celery stick in my drink. All right, here's a question. Where'd you learn to speak such good English? Anatoly chuckled. I've been in this country for over 12 years now. Yeah, but there are a lot of people who spend their entire adult lives in a foreign country and never become fluent in their second language or grasp the use of slang as you seem to have. Hell, you even conjugate your verbs. I've spent a good portion of time with a lot of people who speak almost entirely in slang. Plus, in my line of work, I often find it advantageous to sound less foreign. For a split second, I thought I saw a glimmer of regret pass over his face. But if I had, it was gone as quickly as it came. I wondered if I had found yet another subject to which he was sensitive. And what exactly is your line of work? Anatoly took a few more gulps of his beer before answering.
I'm a contractor.
A contractor? Like a contract killer?
Yeah, that's right. I'm a contract killer. Would you like a business card?
No, but I might want a list of references. I tried to scoot my stool forward without having to get up. So I guess you're a contractor in the more legal sense, as in you fix houses and stuff.
And stuff.
Well, this is a good city for that line of work. There are lots of old Victorians that are falling apart as we speak. But why is it so advantageous to sound less foreign? Anatoly shrugged.
Construction workers seem to be more willing to take direction from men who sound like locals. I think my clients prefer it, too.
Anatoly didn't exactly sound local.
Do you have any clients right now? I've been doing a few odd jobs here and there, and I have a few bids out. But for the most part, it would be fair to qualify me as being between projects.
You might want to consider sounding a little more Russian again.
I'll take it under advisement. So how about you? How did you get into writing?
Oh, it's a pretty mundane story. My ex-husband screwed me over. I wanted to castrate him, but I didn't want to go to jail. So I wrote a book about castrating him.
Your first book is about castrating your ex?
Well, it's supposed to be about another woman castrating and killing a whole bunch of men, but if you read between the lines, yes. It's a book about me castrating and killing my ex-husband. Anatoly grinned and swallowed some more beer.
So you write fantasies?
I laughed. Well, my fantasies at least. No, actually, I just write ordinary mainstream fiction. The difference being that the crimes I write about may not have happened, but they could have. I take great pains to make sure that the books I write come across as being very realistic.
But they can't be that realistic. You're not a cop or an investigator, and as far as I know, you're not a criminal, which means you have no first-hand experience in the things you write about. It's not possible for you to know what real-life crime is all about.
Have you read any of my books?
No, I don't think I have.
Well, then you're being a bit presumptuous, aren't you? Not to mention an asshole. Anatoly nearly spit his beer all over the table.
You're getting a lot better with your insults.
It's nice of you to give me so many opportunities to perfect my technique.
You can practice on me any time. I'm available nights and weekends.
I was tempted to ask what other services he offered, but forced myself to keep my mouth shut. He rested his forearm on the table.
Hey, have you had any serious relationships since your marriage?
Not a one.
What's really sad is that I'm not lucky at cards either.
Anatoly's eyes locked with mine.
Luck has a tendency to change.
For a moment, I couldn't find my voice. I took a long drink of the Bloody Mary. I was nervous. The sad thing was that I couldn't figure out if I was nervous because I was beginning to really like Anatoly or because I was afraid someone was trying to kill me. That really couldn't be healthy. I searched my mind for a nice, safe topic. So you moved from Russia to Israel to the U.S. Sounds like a lot of life-altering changes.
I was in Israel for just under 4 years. Then, as soon as the American Immigration Office saw fit to allow my admittance, I was on my way to the States.
You were in the Israeli army?
Of course, it's mandatory service. He paused to drink. I was in the Russian army, too.
Oh my God, you're a mercenary.
I was a citizen of both countries.
Okay, but two armies? I don't know, there's something odd about that.
Most women find it exciting.
Are these the same women who developed a crush on Steven Seagal? Anatoly leaned back from the table and grinned.
You know, I never asked about that. I have been with women who have had a thing for Jean-Claude Van Damme. Is that the same thing?
Pretty much. Were you ever in a kill-or-be-killed situation?
No. Never during my length of service was I in that particular situation. I was lucky. I had to think about the wording on that one. What about outside your length of service? I've never been in combat outside of Israel or Russia either. But you have had some close calls here? What makes you say that?
I hate it when people respond to a question with a question. It almost always implies guilt.
Anatoly, I don't mean to grill you, but I do have a few set standards when it comes to dating. They are as follows. I never date men who are con artists, murderers, or spawn of the devil. I just need to know that you don't fit into any of those categories. Anatoly's body relaxed a bit as he leaned toward me. I'm not a con artist. I have never committed murder. I'm a little murky on the devil spawn part, but my mother decided to stay in Israel, so hopefully that will be a non-issue. Well, 2 out of 3 ain't bad. I took another bite out of my celery stick. So, what kind of close calls have you had outside of the army? Does your family live here? Gee, that was subtle. I wanted to press him for more clear answers, but I could see his jaw tightening. Better to shelve the question for another day when I had more energy, patience, and a car to get home with. My mom, my sister, and her husband and baby. My father died 18 years ago.
I'm sorry. Were you close?
Very. I think I take after him in a lot of ways. Of course, I'm close to my mom, too, and my sister and I talk regularly. But she and I are just very different people. I've always looked for the road less traveled. She, on the other hand, married a CPA.
Got it. How long have you lived in Russian Hill?
I've been in the same flat for the last 9 years.
I've never been in the same city for 9 years. Are you friends with all the neighbors?
I hate them. Anatoly stifled a laugh. Fortunately, the guy on the first floor is always out of town, and the woman below me and I have an unspoken agreement to only acknowledge one another's presence once every 5 years, so it works for me. In fact, she was the one to tell me about my car this morning, so with any luck, she'll be giving me the silent treatment for the rest of the decade.
All right. I'm sure there are other benefits to staying in the same place for so long. Rent control, for instance.
Oh, God, yes. If it were to go on the market today, the landlord would probably raise the rent by a good $1,000 a month. Plus, the landlord lets me do anything I want as long as it brings up the property value. Hey, maybe you could do some remodeling for me. The timing's perfect. I just finished my last book, so it wouldn't be disruptive to my work. Anatoly rearranged his legs under the table.
My plate's pretty full right now.
I thought you said you were between projects.
I am, but I expect that one of my bids is going to be accepted any day now. It's a big job, and I want to keep myself available for it.
He polished off the rest of his Pacifico.
Do you want another drink?
No, I think I'm done for a while.
Good.
Anatoly signaled to the waitress that he wanted the check.
I want to walk up to Coit Tower. It's one of the few San Francisco monuments I haven't gotten around to visiting.
Yeah, it's beautiful in a phallic kind of way, but you have to climb up a pretty steep hill to get there. The cocktail waitress came over with the check. I suppressed a little smile. There were definitely brown roots. After sticking his wallet away in his back pocket, Anatoly's focus came back to me.
I think you can make the walk.
His eyes ran up and down my body.
You look like you're in very good shape.
My cheeks heated up and I squirmed in my seat. My feminist side was telling me to be offended, but I couldn't quite get myself to obey that particular dictate. I was too busy picturing Anatoly naked.
Shall we? Anatoly asked.
Whatever he was asking me to do, the answer was yes. He extended his hand to me. Was it normal to be turned on by holding a guy's hand? Then again, this guy did have those mighty fine hands. He led me out of the restaurant. My libido came back under control during the climb to Coit Tower. The road leading there wasn't quite at a 90-degree angle, but it was about as close as you could get without making walking up it a gravitational impossibility. By the time we made it to the top, I was a sweaty, puffing mess that even lipstick couldn't compensate for. Anatoly wasn't even winded, which did nothing to improve my spirits. I sat down on the low concrete barrier that encased the bell-shaped parking lot. Is there a reason we didn't take your bike up here?
We wouldn't have gotten the full experience.
Oh, yeah, I wouldn't want to miss the experience of having cardiac arrest or anything. Anatoly laughed and shook his head.
Do me a favor. Shut up and enjoy the view.
I responded by sticking my tongue out at him before turning my back to the white, phallic-shaped monument to absorb the rest of my surroundings. It really was beautiful. From where I stood, you could see both the Golden Gate and Bay Bridges.
The weather was perfect for sailing, so the water was decorated with little white triangles gliding over its surface. It wasn't officially tourist season yet, but there were still a fair number of men and women scattered around the monument, snapping their cameras and speaking in foreign tongues. It was so peaceful and welcoming that any nagging fears left over from the morning's episode seemed to just blow away in the breeze. No matter what awaited me at the bottom of the hill, I knew that as long as I was here, I was safe. I greedily inhaled the fresh sea air.
It's spectacular, isn't it?
Anatoly turned his back to the bay.
Yes, spectacular is a good word for it.
My breath quickened slightly.
Sophie, there is something I've wanted to do all day.
What's that? He answered by gently caressing my cheek. He leaned forward and touched my lips with his. It was gentle, tender, and extremely hot. He backed up just enough so he could speak.
More?
More would be good. Anatoly moved in again. This time the kiss was deeper. He parted my lips with his tongue as one hand held me tightly against him, and the other hand moved forcefully up my back. He abandoned my mouth in favor of my neck, and I silently thanked God that I had tossed aside the turtleneck. Anatoly released me, and it took every last morsel of self-control not to cry out in protest.
"I think I'm done looking at Coit Tower," he said. "Perhaps we could go somewhere a little quieter?"
You know, safety is overrated. It was time to leave this little utopia and start living dangerously, in my apartment. I ran a teasing finger down Anatoly's arm until its path was stopped by his watch. "Wait a minute, is that right? Is it really 5:15? I checked my watch for verification. Shit, I'm supposed to be at that surprise party at 6.
"Surprise party? Do you really have to go?"
I bit down on my lip. My going to the party was really important to Marcus. Of course, getting laid was really important to me. "It's for a sick friend of Marcus's. He's a big fan of my books, and I promised Marcus that I'd show up as a kind of celebrity guest type thing."
"How sick is he?"
My shoulders slumped. "He has AIDS." I reluctantly tucked my hands into my pockets. "Do you want to come with me?" Anatoly sighed and shook his head.
"I wasn't invited, and you really should spend your time and energy on the guest of honor. I think it's best if I don't come."
Well, it looked like I wasn't going to get to come either. "Will you at least give me a ride?" Anatoly draped an arm over my shoulders.
"Your chariot awaits."
Chapter 7. "I equate days to music," she explained. "Some play out like Pachelbel's Canon performed by the New York Symphony Orchestra. Others are more like a badly composed Beatles medley that you're forced to listen to while on hold for the dentist. Sex, drugs, and murder." The party itself was fun, if not particularly memorable. I signed a few books and managed to enjoy myself, although I made a point of telling Marcus what I had sacrificed to be there. He showed his appreciation by cutting me an extra-large piece of chocolate cake that he personally dosed with brandy. When the festivities were over, he gave me a ride home and idled the car in front of my apartment. He turned the music down so we could hear ourselves talk over the material girl.
"Thanks so much for coming, Soph. It just made Steve's night."
I nodded. "He's a nice guy. He told me that when things get bad, he escapes into one of my books. Considering what he's escaping, I think that may be the greatest compliment of my life."
"Yeah," Marcus pulled gently on one of his locks. "That boy has gotten damn skinny. The reason we wrap things up at 9 is that he tires out so fast. He did seem to be having fun, though, didn't he?"
"Yeah, he was having fun." I covered Marcus's hand with my own.
"The party was perfect. You did good."
Marcus smiled slightly and looked into the darkness. I nudged him gently in the ribs.
"Speaking of doing good, I didn't expect to see Donato there tonight."
Marcus's smile became more animated.
"Mm-hmm, Donato and I are a thing. He's fun, he's romantic, and damn, girl, you should see him when he starts working those hips. And I am not talking about dancing, okay?"
"I guess I'll have to take your word for it. He's kind of eccentric, isn't he?"
"Greek gods often are. I could see his eyes twinkle despite the poor lighting. He's meeting me at my place in an hour for a private worship session.
Private worship session, huh? Well, far be it for me to keep you from your religious duties.
I kissed him on the cheek and gathered up my purse and coat.
Do you have time to give me a deep condition and trim on Tuesday?
Honey, for you, I'll make the time. Call the salon, they'll pencil you in.
It's a date, then.
I popped out of the car and watched as Marcus drove off.
Hi, Sophie.
I turned to see Andy smiling down at me. Hey, Andy, what are you doing here? He shuffled his feet awkwardly.
I just helped Mrs. Murphy carry some groceries home.
I noted the time. 9:30, a bit late for a little old lady to be grocery shopping. Of course, for all I knew, Mrs. Murphy could be some young socialite afraid of breaking a nail.
Was that guy your boyfriend?
Hmm? Oh, Marcus? I wish. No, he's just a friend. I don't have a boyfriend. As soon as I said it, I realized my mistake. Andy was about to ask me out, and I had just ruined what would have been a perfectly good excuse to say no.
Well, Andy, it was good to see you. I've got to get upstairs. My cat's probably really hungry by now.
Where were my keys? I felt them at the bottom of my purse.
Great, now if I could just get inside quickly enough.
Would you like to go out with me sometime?
Shit.
I could take you somewhere really nice. I've been saving money from my paychecks.
I looked at my keys hanging in the unopened lock. Listen, Andy, I'm really flattered, but...
But you don't want to go out with a retard.
God, no. You're not a retard.
Was he angry?
I didn't even know he had a temper. It's just that, well, I've got a lot going on right now, and I simply don't have any time, so I've decided to hold off on dating for a while.
So you're not dating anyone?
The cloud that had briefly darkened his features slipped away and was replaced by befuddlement. He looked like a kid who had just discovered he'd wandered too far from his parents. Nope. Not unless you're tall, dark, and Russian, in which case I'm all over it. Andy shifted his weight from foot to foot.
I guess I understand that.
I doubted that, but he was willing to accept it, and that's all I cared about. Well, like I said, I've got to go feed the cat. It took concerted effort to hide my relief.
Okay, Sophie. I'll see you soon, right?
Of course, Andy. I'll see you at the market.
I was so good.
I felt my guard go up the minute I got into the apartment. I turned on every light and spent about a half hour meticulously checking for broken glass or anything unusual, but everything was as it should be. I stood in the middle of the living room and scowled at my published novels neatly lined up on the top bookshelf. How sad was it that I had actually lost the ability to tell the difference between fiction and reality? Dina had always said that prolonged sexual abstinence leads to early senility. I bent down to scratch Mr. Katz behind the ears. I'd better get Anatoly up here fast before I hurt myself diving through a looking glass trying to find Hogwarts. The next morning, I let my fingers do the walking through all the emergency auto window replacement ads. The problem was that I didn't consider my need for a new driver's side window an emergency. It wasn't a new car, and I was pretty sure that the insurance company was going to consider it totaled, so why should I care if some homeless guy wanted to take a nap in it? I closed the phone book and relaxed back into the chair. It was a typical, cold, foggy San Francisco day, perfect for lighting up a fire, taking the phone off the hook, and reading a good book. I looked over at the bookcase. There was a book on the top shelf that was slightly out of place. Funny, it hadn't been that way last night. I mechanically rose from the chair. With every step toward that bookcase, my heartbeat got a little louder. Without being able to see the title, all I could tell was that it was a novel from my series. I pulled it out. Sex, Drugs, and Murder. I dropped the book. There was no uncertainty this time. And if it had been in the right place before I went to bed, and if I hadn't left the apartment since, then that meant someone had been in here. Oh, my God. I could see the front door from where I stood. It was bolted and locked. I couldn't see any evidence of forced entry, but then there was always the window. Had they come in when I was asleep? When I was taking a shower? Were they still here? I tried to block out the faint street noise that filtered through my bay window in order to focus on any sounds that might be coming from inside. I thought I heard a quiet thump, so subtle that I couldn't swear that I had heard it at all. It could have been nothing. a figment of my overly anxious mind or a bird that had inadvertently brushed against the panes of glass in the bedroom. Or it could have been an intruder lying in wait. Mr. Katz purred and curled around my feet. Keeping my back against the bookcase, I bent my knees and with one arm scooped up the cat and with the other carefully picked up the book by the pages without touching the cover. I straightened to a standing position. "Are you ready, Mr. Katz?" Mr. Katz struggled against me. I took that as a yes and ran for the door. I fumbled with the locks, almost dropping the book and my pet. I needed to get out. I needed to get out and call the police, and this time they were going to take me seriously. I flew out the door and down a flight of stairs to the flat below, Mr. Katz hissing and clawing the whole way as I held him in a death grip. I pounded on the door of my neighbor's quarters. "Teresa, it's me, Sophie, let me in, it's an emergency." Teresa threw open the door looking predictably sour-faced. Her expression became even more pinched when she saw Mr. Katz.
"If you think you are going to bring that flea-bitten animal into my home..."
I pushed past her. "Teresa, I'm not kidding, there really is an emergency, I need to use your phone."
"You're trespassing. If you and your rodent don't get out of my flat this instant, I'm going to call the police. Do you understand me?"
"Oh, for God's sake. Here, I'll save you the trouble." I dropped Mr. Katz in favor of her princess phone sitting on the antique side table. 911 emergency, a voice recited on the other end of the line. "Someone's broken into my home. Are they still on the premises?" "I don't know." "Where are you, ma'am?" "I'm at my neighbor's in the apartment below."
"What's the number of your place?"
I gave her all the necessary information. After listening to my end of the conversation, Teresa seemed somewhat less inclined to kick me out, and instead pulled a kitchen chair under her doorknob. The dispatcher didn't let me off the phone until the assigned officers buzzed the apartment. I picked up my book and Mr. Katz, who by this time was only marginally less traumatized than myself, and fought the urge to kick the door down as I waited for Teresa to let us out. I stepped out into the foyer just in time to see Officer Gorman coming up the stairs. We looked at each other, unsure of how to react. Gorman's partner, a short, muscular young guy, ran up the stairs after him. He looked at Gorman questioningly. Gorman nodded to him.
"The next one up."
He jerked his head back in my direction.
"It's open?"
"Yeah, I didn't hang around long enough to lock up."
"Stay here."
He and the short guy took the stairs two at a time. I knew that I should stay where I was, but now that the police were there to give me a false sense of security, I felt my curiosity getting the better of me. I gave them a few minutes to get in and look around before cautiously climbing the stairs after them. When I stepped through my door, Mr. Katz leaped out of my arms and dashed under the coffee table, a maneuver that almost sent Officer Gorman sprawling. I shrank into the corner.
"Sorry about that. He's a little nervous."
"Uh-huh."
The young cop came out of the bedroom.
"No sign of anybody here. No sign of forced entry, either."
"Nope."
I slammed my fist against the wall.
"I did not make this up. Somebody was here. I don't know if they came and left in the middle of the night or if they were here more recently, but I know they were here."
The young one scratched the back of his head.
"What was it that alerted you?"
"There was a book out of place."
A good 60 seconds passed before either of them found his voice. Finally, Gorman cleared his throat.
"A book?"
I squeezed my eyes shut. This just couldn't be happening again. "Okay, I know how lame that sounds, but you have to hear me out on this. I am not a crackpot. I know someone was here, and I know it was the same person who vandalized my car." Gorman sat down on the couch, and the other officer leaned against the wall, wearing a rather bemused expression. I took a shaky deep breath. I had to make them believe me. "Okay. I told you about sex, drugs, and murder, right?"
"Sex, drugs, and murder? Is that one of those alternative lifestyle courses they teach at Berkeley?" asked the young cop.
Gorman lifted his hand as if to say, "Don't ask." "Look, I held the book out in front of me by the corner of two pages. This is the book. This is also the book that was out of place on my bookshelf. It was placed on its back so that it was sticking out. Someone wants to be sure that I know that they are reenacting my book, and I think I just might be playing the part of the murder victim." Neither of the officers said anything. "All right, maybe I'm not the murder victim. Maybe I'm the protagonist, Alicia Bright, and it's my job to figure out the crime. But I could be Kitty. Don't you guys get it? What the fuck am I supposed to do if I'm Kitty the victim?"
"Drink milk?"
The young cop busted up laughing. I bit down on my tongue. What exactly was the penalty for assaulting an officer? "You know,
My life might be at stake here. Is it too much to ask that you pretend to care?
The young cop pulled a glove out of his pocket and, after putting it on, took the book.
Tell you what, if it'll make you feel better, we can dust this for prints. You'll have to come down to the station and give us a set of your own prints so we can compare. If someone with a criminal history has touched this, we'll know.
Gorman looked at the other cop as if he had caught my infectious disease.
Hey, what can it hurt? Joey's working today, he'll do it.
Gorman shook his head but didn't offer any protests. The cop turned back to me.
How about you? You up for it?
Okay, they may not have been convinced that I was sane, but they were at least willing to check out my story. I put a calming hand on my stomach.
Thank you so much. Can we do that now?
Gorman rose to his feet. Yep. He motioned for his partner to follow him out, but before he made any progress, I reached out a restraining hand.
I've got a question.
Uh-huh. Was there ever a point in your life in which you spoke in full sentences?
Nope.
Didn't think so.
When I got back to the apartment, Mr. Katz was still hiding under the coffee table. I tossed my purse on a chair and prepared a bowl of kibble as a means of apology. The trip to the police station had been awful. The only prints on the book were mine. Neither Gorman nor his partner thought anything I said held any credibility, and for a few scary moments I thought I was going to be booked for making a prank call to 911. Were they right? Was I losing my mind? I looked over at the empty space on the top bookshelf. No, someone had been there. Someone was toying with me. I placed the bowl of cat food in front of the coffee table, and Mr. Katz cautiously inched out from underneath. I gently stroked my cat's ruffled fur. Maybe we should stay somewhere else for a while. But what good would staying somewhere else be? I would still have to go outside. And how long would I have to stay away from my home before it was safe? A week? A month? How would I know? I used my index fingers to apply gentle pressure to my temples. There had to be a smart thing to do. I just had to figure out what it was. The phone interrupted my thoughts. I put my hand on the receiver and let it ring again. I was actually leery about answering my own phone. I shook my head. I couldn't let them do this to me. I wouldn't. I picked it up on the fourth ring. Hello?
I've got to get out of the house.
Leah, this really isn't a good time. I collapsed onto the love seat. Ever since my sister had given birth to my nephew a year and a half ago, our contact had been reduced to frequent quasi-therapy sessions, in which I listened patiently and pretended to empathize with her trials and tribulations as a stay-at-home mom. Normally, I could rise to the occasion, but at the moment I was a bit too caught up in the trials and tribulations of being a potential homicide victim.
I'm not kidding, Sophie. Jack is absolutely driving me nuts. I cannot spend another day following him around the house as he systematically tears the place apart. You're taking us out to lunch at Chevy's.
I am. I hadn't realized. Am I paying?
Of course you're paying. It's your way of being supportive of me while I'm on the edge of a breakdown.
How considerate of me. Where's your husband?
Bob had a golf game today.
Is that his way of being supportive? I could practically hear Leah grimace.
Are you going to meet me at Chevy's or not?
I considered the alternatives. Go to lunch with my sister and her toddler son, or hang around my place and wait for someone to hack me up with an axe. It was a tough choice, but the scale did seem to be tipping slightly in Leah's favor. You'll have to pick me up. My car's out of commission.
So now I have to drive across the city just to have lunch at Chevy's?
I loved my sister. Really, I did. You don't have to drive anywhere, Leah. You could stay home. But if you want to have lunch with me, particularly if you want me to treat you, then yes, you'll have to come get me.
Fine. We'll go to the Chevy's at the Embarcadero, then. I'll be there in 45 minutes. Be ready. I don't want to have to wait long with Jack in the car.
Well, I wouldn't want to inconvenience you. I'll see you in an hour.
45 minutes.
Whatever. I hung up and went back to trying to massage my headache away. An hour and a half later, Leah buzzed the apartment. I gave Mr. Katz a goodbye pet. I'm going out for a little while. If anyone tries to break in while I'm gone, I want you to meow really loud, okay? Mr. Katz needed the rug in response. I met my sister down at her car and slipped into the front passenger seat. Have trouble getting out of the house?
You have no idea.
Leah pushed her Volvo into drive and headed toward the Embarcadero. I twisted myself into a position so that I could see the back seat. Hi, Jack. How are you today?
No!
Jack's going through a no phase, Leah said. A no phase. Got it. I didn't get it at all, but then again I didn't have to. All I had to do was remember to use contraceptives. Leah pressed a button to crack open the moonroof. Half the reason I'm late is that nitwit Cheryl. I made a face at the mention of Leah's sister-in-law's name. She was a nitwit. Kind of like her brother. She called while I was trying to get Jack together, and I simply could not get her off the phone. Can you believe she's still groaning about that whole Tolsky thing? The Tolsky thing? I pulled the sun visor down and checked my lipstick in the mirror. Why? Was she going to write a screenplay for him, too? No, she just thought she was going to get to meet him. Jack began to babble to himself as Leah carefully maneuvered around a cable car. He made a reservation at the Ritz the morning before he killed himself. Cheryl had the pleasure of taking the reservation and canceling it. I snapped the sun visor back up. Wait a minute. You're telling me that Tolsky made a reservation at a San Francisco hotel less than 24 hours before he killed himself? Apparently so. Can you imagine how impossible Cheryl would have been if she had met him? It's bad enough listening to her go on and on about the time she met Meg Ryan. I mean, she's a hotel clerk, not a Hollywood insider. Leah, doesn't that seem strange to you? Why would anyone make a hotel reservation shortly before committing suicide? Who knows what he was thinking? The man was obviously sick. Did you see his movie Deathly Seduction? Ugh. Anyone who could produce and direct something so... Jack let out a scream at a pitch that would have damaged the hearing of a dog. Leah whipped her head back in his direction to chastise him. Leah, look out! I gasped. She brought her attention back to the street just in time to miss a bicyclist, but in doing so, almost slammed the car into a bus. The tires squealed against the pavement as she struggled to gain control. She hit the brakes and the car jerked to a stop as the traffic light turned red. I sat immobile, clinging to the door. Leah cleared her throat. Jack's going through a screaming phase, too. I'm never having kids. For the rest of the ride, Leah focused on driving, and I focused on deep breathing exercises. When we arrived at our destination, Leah locked Jack into a high chair and collapsed into her own seat. God, I'm tired. Jack had a bad night last night. Well, he was having one hell of an afternoon. I flipped open the menu. Have some coffee. That will just make me agitated. Then have a margarita. Sophie, you can't think that I would drink alcohol while watching Jack. Okay, I'll have a margarita. Hello, ladies. Would you like to order something to drink while you decide? Asked a young man with bright red hair and a smile that was only somewhat strained. I'll have the mango margarita, I said. My son will have a glass of milk, and I'll have a glass of your sangria. Got it. The waiter scribbled our order down and left us to study the rest of the menu. I thought you couldn't drink while watching Jack. Wine doesn't count. Jack began to fuss, and Leah handed him a napkin. Here, honey, why don't you tear this up? Jack started happily ripping the paper to shreds. So, what happened to your car?
Oh, somebody I cast a quick glance at Jack. Somebody messed with it.
What do you mean they messed with it?
They slashed up the seats, rug, and spare tire. Probably the work of some strung-out kids. I had no intention of telling her about the events of that morning. Leah had a tendency to overreact, and I still hadn't gotten rid of my headache. Leah frowned and tapped her nails against the table. The waiter came with our drinks and took our order before she voiced her thoughts.
I heard about the woman who was killed in your neighborhood.
Yeah, pretty ugly, huh?
I hope you're being careful, Sophie. She twisted her wedding band around on her finger. I worry about you living all by yourself.
I don't live by myself. I live with Mr. Katz.
You know, most women don't start talking to their cats until they're 80.
Yes, well, I've always been precocious. Leah sighed and gave Jack another napkin to destroy.
I don't suppose you're dating anyone.
Actually, I am. Leah nearly choked on a floating piece of fruit.
You are? Why in God's name didn't you tell me?
I did tell you, just now.
But I had to ask, that doesn't count.
I took a much-needed sip of my margarita. Okay, let's pretend you didn't ask. Leah, guess what? I'm dating someone.
Ha ha. All right, smarty, who is he? And don't leave out any details.
I gave her a brief rundown on Anatoly, including his physical description, career background, and a list of his previous residences. By the time I'd finished, the waiter was back with our food.
Leah sliced up some quesadilla for Jack before he started systematically dropping each piece on the floor.
Well, he's Jewish. That'll make Mom happy.
I have no intention of ever introducing him to Mom, and I don't want you talking to her about this either. Got it, Leah?
You're gonna have to tell her about him if it gets serious.
We've been on one date. It's not serious.
But it could get serious. Honestly, Sophie, you can't be so cautious. You're not a kid anymore. Statistically speaking, you're more likely to get hit by a truck than get married again.
People get hit by trucks all the time.
This isn't a joke. Now, let's see. Did you say you've only been on one date with him?
Well, it's more like one and a half. I went to an opening at a gallery with Marcus, and Anatoly was there. The two of us hung out and shared a cab home. Does that count as a date?
No.
Oh. I tasted my drink again. What counts as a date, then?
He has to ask you to go out at a specific time and date, and you have to say yes. He has to come pick you up, then you engage in some activity together, and you leave together.
Huh. Okay, Anatoly and I did engage in an activity together, and we left together, so...
It doesn't count.
Leah chewed on her enchilada.
You haven't slept with him, have you? You know you have to hold out until at least the third date, otherwise he'll think you're easy.
I didn't sleep with him.
Well, thank God you have some sense.
I didn't have a chance. By the time things started getting really steamy between the two of us, I had to get going to a surprise party. But next time I see him, I'm definitely going to be wearing the good underwear.
Sophie, you can't be serious. You know, this is Dina's influence. You spent all your time hanging out with her at her sex shop, and now you've turned into a slut.
Slut, 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 slut.
Jack was happily banging a spoon against his tray as he proudly yelled out his new word at the top of his voice. Leah grabbed Jack's shoulders and desperately tried to defuse the situation as the neighboring tables shot us alarmed stares.
No, no, honey. You misheard, Mommy. I didn't call Auntie Sophie a slut. I called her a mutt. That's it, honey. Auntie Sophie is a mutt.
I slid down in my seat and considered asking the waiter to put another shot of tequila in my margarita. Obviously, I had made the wrong choice today. I should have waited for the axe murderer. When Jack finally quieted down, I threw out the one comment that I knew would distract Leah from her current line of questioning.
God, Leah, you must be exhausted.
Leah brightened.
I am exhausted. Honestly, I don't know how I manage. Yesterday, I put off doing errands because I was afraid that if I got in the car, I might fall asleep at the wheel.
Wow, that's tough.
Tell me about it.
She tossed her processed hair over her shoulder with a well-practiced dramatic touch.
The other day, it took me 50 minutes to get him down for a nap. 50 minutes, Sophie. I was so drained from the ordeal that I couldn't even use the hour that he was asleep productively. I actually sat on the couch and watched MTV News of all things. And while watching it, I realized how completely out of it I am. I used to be hip, remember?
Leah was never hip.
Of course I remember.
Now I don't know half the singers they were talking about. I mean, who on earth is JJ Money or DC Smooth?
I perked up. Oh, were they talking about the charges against DC Smooth? You know, it was an article about that case that first brought Anatoly and me together. It was the front page story in the New York Times the day that he tried to steal the paper from me.
God, I find that whole messy situation so interesting. It has book potential written all over it.
I don't think he did it, do you?
He tried to steal your newspaper?
Long story. Anyway, I've been following this and the pieces just don't fit. DC claims that JJ Money called him up and challenged him, told him to meet him in the VIP room of some nightclub to settle some old scores, right?
Well,
DC goes and he's ready for action. He's got a switchblade and a gun, tells a whole bunch of people that he's going to set JJ Money straight. I sat up a little straighter as I narrated. He goes to the club and waits. JJ Money's a no-show, so DC gets antsy and decides to go outside to see if he can find him. Again, he tells some of his friends what he's up to. Next thing you know, DC's in some nearby alley standing over JJ Money's body. JJ Money's been shot with a gun left at the crime scene, only it's not DC Smooth's gun, but JJ Money's own gun. I don't care how high DC might have been, nobody's stupid enough to tell the world that he's going to go mess with someone and then shoot that same someone and then hang around long enough to tell the cops that he didn't do it. I hit my spoon against the table for emphasis. And why shoot him with JJ's own gun? It just doesn't make sense.
Sophie?
Yeah?
I don't care.
I pressed my lips into a tight little smile. I had forgotten who I was talking to. One should never interrupt Leah when she is talking about herself. It just isn't done. Jack was now carefully pouring milk over the food that surrounded his high chair.
Jack, stop. Did you hear me? Mommy said no. Oh, for God's sake, where is the waiter with our check? Do you see what I go through?
I spent the rest of the time at Chevy's helping Leah do damage control after Hurricane Jack, furiously waving down our waiter and listening to Leah tell me how put upon she was and how I should marry and have kids so we could be put upon together. The axe murderer was in for a letdown. If the lunch didn't end soon, I was going to kill myself.
Chapter 8. As if her own neuroses didn't complicate her life enough, now she had to deal with everyone else's. Sex, drugs, and murder. Eventually, Leah did drive me home. I jumped out of the car and watched her drive off. One of us had to have been adopted. I went up to my apartment and let my hand rest on the brass doorknob. I stood there for a full 2 minutes. I wanted to smack myself for being such a wimp. This was my home. Some idiot rearranged my bookshelf and now I was afraid to go inside? Where was the Sophie that had nonchalantly walked through the slums of the city by herself at night while doing research for her novels? Where was the woman who had won a tug-of-war with a street punk who had tried to steal her purse? I drew in a deep breath and opened the door. I laced my keys through my fingers in the way Dina had taught me. If I had to punch someone, they would be seriously cut. I stepped into the entryway and was greeted by what seemed to be a calm and collected Mr. Katz. No visits from deranged fans this afternoon? Mr. Katz purred expectantly. Okay, I'll pay attention to you in a second. Just let me do a quick walkthrough. I checked every room and narrow closet, keys in hand, and scrutinized every shelf, dresser, and countertop to see if anything was displaced. When I was sure that everything was in order, I lowered myself onto the sofa and allowed Mr. Katz to knead away at my black chinos. I stroked his fur and tried to formulate a plan of attack, but none was forthcoming. I needed help with this. I let my hand rest on the phone, although I didn't have the slightest idea who it was that I was going to call. Fortunately, I didn't have to figure it out because someone called me first. My fingers tightened around the receiver. I no longer feared that it would be a prank call. I just desperately hoped that whoever was on the line could offer me some viable solutions. I brought it to my ear. Please tell me this is my guardian angel. Why do you need a guardian angel? Anatoly. I let my body relax against the leather cushions.
Right on the first guess, I'm flattered. Why do you need a guardian angel?
It's nothing. And even if I was serious, I wouldn't ask you to fill that role. You wouldn't make a good angel. Dark angel, maybe. What's up?
I was just calling to find out when I was going to see you again. Are you busy tonight?
Only if we make plans. Anatoly was an infinitely better escape mechanism than my sister and her Tasmanian devil.
Good answer. How about a late movie with a few drinks afterward?
Funny, you don't strike me as the movie type. I balanced the receiver between my ear and shoulder as I tried to remove Mr. Katz's claws from my thigh.
Do you have a particular film in mind? They're playing Suspicion at the Roxy.
Hitchcock? I dropped Mr. Katz on the floor and jumped to my feet. You like Hitchcock?
Is that a problem?
Are you kidding? I think I want to bury your children.
There was a silence on the line.
Anatoly, that was a joke.
I realize that. I've just never elicited such a strong response by simply picking the right movie.
I'm easy.
Really? Mm-hmm. Just ask my nephew. Another silence.
That was an inside joke that didn't carry over too well. You see... You know what? Never mind. When are you picking me up? I could make out Anatoly's muffled laughter.
The movie starts at 9:40, so why don't I come and pick you up at 9:45?
I'll be here with bells on.
She's easy, and she wears bells. What more could a man want from a woman? Goodbye, Anatoly.
I hung up and turned to Mr. Katz. So, on a scale of 1 to 10, how badly do you think I came across in that conversation? Mr. Katz blinked his eyes.
Good idea. If I were you, I wouldn't answer either.
I spent the rest of the day and early evening hours trying to fix my kitchen window. In the end, I wound up leaving a lengthy message on my landlord's voicemail asking that he send someone out to take care of it immediately, knowing full well that in landlord speak, immediately often translated into 3 or 4 days. Anatoly showed up at 9:15 on the button. I pulled out a hair and placed it in the crack of space above the deadbolt. It was hard to see, but if anyone came in, the hair would fall, hopefully without their noticing, and I would know there had been an intruder. Of course, they could just take the easy way and go in the partially open window by the fire escape, but I preferred to think that my stalker liked to be challenged. I met Anatoly at the door and leaned in to give him a lingering kiss. So, I guess all that military service taught you something about punctuality.
Or perhaps I was just eager to be in your company, he countered as he handed me a helmet.
I couldn't stop myself from rolling my eyes.
Or perhaps you're well-practiced in the art of bullshit.
Anatoly laughed.
It's actually a course you have to take before becoming licensed as a contractor. BS with style.
Great, I yelled as Anatoly started the ignition. I'll try to remember not to trust you.
And you'll forgive me if I don't remind you of that.
The conversation ended at this point as we roared toward the theater. When we got there, we made the requisite purchase at the concession stand before going to find our seats. Anatoly tried to steer me to 2 empty spots at the end of a row, but I pushed him farther towards the center. Normally I prefer aisle seats, just in case I have to make a quick trip to the ladies' room mid-film, I said, but this is Hitchcock, so I'll hold it. Anatoly placed the soda in the cup holder farthest from me before taking off his jacket.
Have you seen this before?
I think I've seen everything Hitchcock's made. This is the one where Joan Fontaine marries Cary Grant only to find out after the fact that she can't trust him. I know something about that from my last marriage, a case of life imitating art. Anatoly was quiet for a moment.
If I remember correctly, Cary Grant turns out to be a good guy in the end. So, in this case, the fiction seems to be preferable to the reality. Unless, of course, you're in my position. I'd much rather date a divorced woman than one who is still married.
Well, aren't we Mr. Morality?
Why, are you unconcerned with the marital status of your dates?
No, no, I steer clear of the men with gold bands around their ring fingers. It's not that I don't empathize with women who are unwittingly married to lecherous bastards, but I'm not particularly interested in donating my time, effort, and body in order to open their eyes to the truth. I popped an overly saturated popcorn kernel in my mouth. Do you know that they actually changed the ending of this movie because the studio didn't want Cary Grant playing a bad guy? The way it was originally written, he ended up killing her. It would have been better that way. I always like it when the leading man turns out to be the villain. No one ever expects it. Anatoly gave me one of his disarming half-smiles.
You do have a dark side, don't you?
I didn't have time to respond. Like Leah, I have a few rules of my own, and one of them is never to talk over a Hitchcock film. When the movie was over, we walked over to the 500 Club, a neighborhood bar a block away from the theater. Well, Anatoly walked. I floated. So far, the evening had been as close to perfect as it could get. I had a gorgeous guy on my arm, Hitchcock on the big screen, a big tub of greasy popcorn, and now an alcoholic beverage. We seated ourselves at an intimate little table, and I enjoyed a particularly strong martini while checking out my surroundings. Our fellow patrons ranged from those who were trying too hard to others who weren't trying at all. The result was an appealing atmosphere that felt open and accepting. It occurred to me that for the last few hours, I hadn't thought about sex, drugs, and murder, or my psychotic fan. I was actually relaxed. Well, somewhat relaxed. Every 10 minutes or so, Anatoly would cast me a look that caused my pulse to race up to a speed that could break the sound barrier. But other than that, I was perfectly calm. And his taste in movies. God, maybe the man had relationship potential after all. I could feel him staring at me again. No doubt about it, I wanted him. But Leah was probably right. I should hold out for one more date. I met his gaze and then quickly hunched my shoulders in an attempt to hide the state of my nipples. The guy hadn't even touched me yet. How could I be reacting this way? I decided to take a stab at casual conversation.
Nobody does suspense like Hitchcock.
My pitch was a note too high to be perceived as casual. I took a steadying breath and tried again. I swear I will spend my entire career aspiring to his creative genius. Anatoly smiled.
I'm glad you enjoyed it.
He reached forward and rested his hand on top of mine. You look beautiful tonight.
Really?
I lowered my voice to a husky whisper.
What does it for you? The wrinkled khakis or the helmet hair?
The whole package, Anatoly said before pulling me in for a kiss. I have always believed that you can judge a man's skills as a lover by the way he kisses. If that was true, Anatoly was a sex god. It couldn't have been more than 60 degrees in that bar, and I still felt the need to remove my jacket as well as a few other choice pieces of clothing. Leah could afford her rules. She was married. Last time I had sex, Jack hadn't even been conceived yet. Anatoly released me.
Are you ready to go?
Yeah, I guess I'm ready to head out.
Are you sure?
The goading tone in which he asked the question was unmistakable.
I wouldn't want to rush you.
Anatoly, do me a favor. Stop being such a smug bastard and let's get out of here before you start pissing me off.
Got it.
He left a few bills on the bar and escorted me out. On the ride home, I rested against Anatoly's back and visualized how the rest of the evening was going to play out. Anatoly would bring me to my building. I would ask him up for a nightcap. A nightcap? Was that too cliché? But then again, who the hell cared if it was cliché or not? The point was, I would get him to come up to my apartment, and in so doing, I would be killing two birds with one stone. I would have a man who was trained in the art of combat accompany me inside, and with any luck, I would finally get laid. Hell, maybe I'd even get him to fix my window for me. I was so absorbed in my planning that I didn't notice when Anatoly passed my turn. When he did stop the bike, it was in front of his place. He paused for me to dismount before parking. I pulled off my helmet. What are we doing here? Anatoly took off his helmet as well.
We're going up to my place.
Really? I don't remember you asking me.
I didn't have to ask. It's obvious that you wanted to.
I felt my anticipation transform into acute annoyance.
Uh-huh.
And this is the world according to Anatoly? Really, this was a little egotistical even for him.
I just called them as I see them.
I smiled and placed a gentle hand against his cheek. Great. Then you can tell me what you call it when you see me walking away. I tossed the helmet at him and started toward my building. I could hear him calling after me, but I had no intention of turning around. Of all the nerve! I jammed my hands in my pockets to better protect them from the sting of the damp cold. Yeah, I had wanted to sleep with him, and maybe that had been obvious from the way I'd responded to his advances. But there was a certain etiquette that needed to be observed. Maybe things weren't as black and white as Leah liked to paint them, but at least he should have had the courtesy to ask me what I wanted before just bringing me to his place with the expectation of getting screwed. What a schmuck. And I didn't sleep with schmucks any more than I slept with Neanderthals. The empty streets just fueled my aggravation. If I could just forcefully push by some pedestrians or scream at a honking car, I might be able to release some of my mounting frustration. But no, all my Russian Hill neighbors had to be responsible and retire early on Sunday nights, leaving me with nothing to scream at but the stars, and I couldn't even do that thanks to all the fricking fog. I finished the 3-block trek downhill and turned the corner onto my street. I squeaked in surprise upon finding myself face to chest with Andy. Andy! I faltered and checked my watch. It's 1 a.m. What are you doing here?
Wait, don't tell me. You're bringing more groceries to Mrs. Murphy.
Andy didn't smile.
I was waiting for you.
At 1 a.m.? What the hell was going on? My previous vexation was forgotten as hundreds of little alarm bells started going off in my head. But this was Andy, the guy I had once seen crying over a dead pigeon. He wasn't any threat.
I came after work. I wanted to give you a flower.
I looked down at his clenched hand and saw what at one time must have been a daisy. All the petals had been pulled off, and the center had been crushed. I tried to laugh.
So, I guess you changed your mind?
I took a step back as he moved forward.
I saw you get on his motorcycle. He's your boyfriend.
No, Andy, he's not. He's just a...
You're a liar. You kissed him. I saw. You lied to me.
This was not okay. I glanced up at the dark windows of the apartment buildings around me. Was he shouting loud enough to wake anybody? Should I scream? But even if I did, how helpful would that be in a city full of people who had become accustomed to hearing the loud ravings of drunks and derelicts? No. It had always been my experience that keeping cool was the best way to handle volatile people. If I could remain calm, I could probably calm him down, too. After all, this was Andy.
Andy, I didn't lie to you. Now it's late and I'm tired. I'm going to go home and go to bed. I think it would be a good idea if you did.
Suddenly I couldn't breathe. This was the moment when I needed to scream, but his hands were too tight around my throat. My back was slammed against the wall of a building. Go for the eyes. That's what Dina always said. I reached my hands out, thumbs extended, but I only grazed his cheeks. He was so tall. I don't think I ever really realized how tall he was. I could feel myself being lifted off the ground. I kicked at him, but it was useless. Little dots began to float before me, multiplying as they went. I was going to die now. Would everything just go black? How long would it take? Dear God, if I could just have one last breath of air. And then I was on the ground, and the air I had been deprived of flooded into my lungs with such force that it caused me to hack and convulse. Things still weren't in focus. Andy was on the ground screaming. But who was on top of him?
What's going on down there? I'm calling the police.
It was a voice from one of the windows above. My vision began to clear and I saw Anatoly. He had his knee in Andy's stomach and was using both hands to bang his head into the pavement. I began to make sense of what was happening.
Stop! I screamed. Pin him! Don't kill him! He doesn't know what he's doing!
I crawled to Andy's head and grabbed Anatoly by the shirt.
I'm okay. It's okay. Just pin him.
Anatoly looked at me. The cool calculation in his eyes made me recoil. He looked down at Andy, who was now clinging on to consciousness and whimpering like an injured child.
She called me retard. I didn't mean to. It's not nice. It's not nice.
The sirens came and the police told us to lie flat against the pavement. Considering our position, that was an easy feat to accomplish. For Andy, it wasn't even a choice. At first I thought the dampness against my face was the result of the mist, but as I heard the second set of sirens approaching, I realized that it was tears. In a matter of minutes, another squad car arrived, and then an ambulance. The police separated the three of us so we could be questioned individually. I don't think Andy was ever able to give them a coherent answer, and it wasn't long before the paramedics loaded him onto the ambulance. A uniformed cop climbed on with him, and the vehicle disappeared down the street with its siren blaring. I tried to ignore the pain speaking caused me so I could answer the questions of the blonde sergeant standing by my side, but for some reason I was having a hard time making sense of his words. I mumbled something about being cold, and he told me I was in shock. He draped a blanket around my shoulders and helped me into his police car. I heard him say something about taking me to the hospital for an exam, and I nodded my consent. I looked out the window and locked eyes with Anatoly, who was busy answering the questions of one of the other cops. We didn't break eye contact until the squad car I was in pulled away from the curb and drove off. 2.5 hours later, I was still shaking. I was sitting on the cushioned examination table in a Stark hospital room. I had been questioned. A woman had taken pictures of the rapidly forming bruises on my neck, and I had been checked for any lingering injuries. Andy was in another room somewhere being nursed back to health so that the waiting policeman could lock him up. I was finding the whole thing impossible to grasp. How could my turning down a date transform a sweet guy into a raving psychopath?
How you doing?
I looked up to see the curly-haired detective who had questioned me earlier. His lean body resting against the doorframe seemed to offer little protection against everything that awaited me outside the room. How's Andy? The detective gave a rueful laugh.
That's awfully generous of you.
He scratched the back of his head and took a few steps forward.
Manning has a hairline fracture in his skull and a minor concussion, but he'll live. No thanks to him, you will too.
I put a protective hand over my throat.
We weren't formally introduced before. I'm Detective Joe Lorenzo.
I tried to smile, but I couldn't find the will to do it. I don't know what set him off. I made up some excuse when he asked me out, but still, he had always been so nice to me. To everyone.
Not to everyone. At least not to the woman he recently killed in your neighborhood.
My stomach did a little nauseous flip-flop. Susan Lee? Are you sure?
We took his prints.
Lorenzo lowered himself onto the doctor's stool.
They're a match to the ones that were all over the crime scene. The doctors don't want us interrogating him yet, but I was able to sneak in a few questions. He's not denying it.
After Anatoly pulled him off me, he was mumbling something about being called a retard. I've never said anything derogatory to him. Do you suppose that was something she said?
Very possible. Manning has frontal lobe damage. That can occasionally result in impulse control problems and violent behavior.
Lorenzo crossed his arms and cocked his head to the side.
I just got off the phone with Gorman. He told me that the damage done to your car was treated as a standard vandalism. I'm sorry about that. You understand he was just following procedure.
You think Andy was the one who tore up my car?
Most likely. Infatuated people sometimes do weird stuff.
Are you going to check the car for his prints?
Has it been parked on the street or in a garage?
The street. I haven't driven it since it was vandalized. Lorenzo sighed and pinched the bridge of his nose.
And the window was broken, right? So it isn't locked?
I let my gaze fall to the speckled linoleum floor. It didn't seem like a necessary precaution considering the state of my car. I silently cursed myself. I should have called the emergency window repair place.
We might dust it in hopes of finding more evidence to support our case, but a lot of time has passed. Theoretically, he could have touched your car after the vandalism. A print would be a nice bit of circumstantial evidence, but nothing more.
What about the prank calls? Lorenzo shook his head to indicate he hadn't been informed of that portion of my fun-packed week. On Thursday, I received a whole bunch of prank calls, at least four. They didn't say anything, just hung up, I explained. After the fourth one, I told the caller that I was married to a cop, so he'd better cut it out. That night, he called again. I got the weirdest feeling that he knew I was lying about the cop thing. Lorenzo pulled out a miniature notebook from his pocket and jotted something down.
How many of these calls have you had since Thursday?
I shook my head. None. It was just that day. Lorenzo clicked his pen and returned the notebook to his pocket.
I'll ask the DA to put in a request for Andy's phone records, but if your number doesn't show up, it won't be worth pursuing further. There's no real need to worry about this. While it would be nice if we could prove that he vandalized your car or called your home, it won't be necessary for a conviction. We have enough now to get him on assault, and we'll probably get him on second-degree murder.
He stretched his long legs into a standing position.
The DA's office will be in touch with you about your testimony, but for now, you're free to go. If you want a minor sedative to help you sleep tonight, I'm sure the doctor will prescribe one for you. But you'll probably sleep a lot better now anyway, knowing that we got your stalker in custody.
He turned to leave. Not really, no. Lorenzo turned back around.
I'm sorry?
I won't sleep better, and you don't have my stalker.
Got it. You feel sorry for Manning because of the brain damage.
Lorenzo's lips curled into a patronizing smile.
Hey, if you don't want to call him a stalker, then don't. Call him an amorous guy with murderous impulses. The point is, we got him, and you're safe.
You don't get it, at all. Andy may be my attacker, but the person who messed up my car and broke into my flat is still out there. Andy's not clever enough to have pulled all that off so smoothly. Lorenzo's jaw was jutting out a bit now.
Listen, I know you've been through a lot tonight and you're not thinking clearly, but Gorman and his partner aren't at all sure that anyone ever did break into your place. It's also unlikely that a guy who was obsessed with you just happened to try to kill you a day after some mystery person ripped apart your car. That coincidence is just a little too hard to swallow.
Well, maybe you're just not very good at taking pills. And for the record, I am thinking clearly. Any softness in Lorenzo's features was now gone.
Good night, Miss Katz. I'll see you at the trial.
I tried to yell after him as he strode out of the room, but I found that the effort was still too painful. I squeezed my eyes closed. None of this made sense. It was obvious that the police were willing to overlook a few inconsistencies in order to wrap everything up neatly. Unfortunately, those oversights could cost me my life. A hot cup of tea, a warm bed, and a good cry is what the doctor should have prescribed. Actually, tea spiked with brandy, that's what I needed, but I had no brandy at home and all the liquor stores would be closed. I really wanted to get up and walk out of the examination room, but I wasn't able to move. I had almost lost my life to someone I had trusted. So what would this anonymous stalker do to me given the chance? I was terrified of being alone. Of course, I could call my mother or Leah, but then I would have to tell them what happened, and I definitely wasn't up for any more hysterics. There was Dina and Marianne, but they would be only slightly less frantic than my family, and they definitely wouldn't be able to hold off on questioning me until the next morning. That went double for Marcus. So, alone it was.
I accessed my last resources of strength and pushed myself off the table. When I stepped into the lobby, 5 microphones were thrust into my face.
Ms. Katz, can you describe the attack?
How long have you known Andrew Manning?
Did you have any idea what he was capable of?
What do you think should happen to Manning now?
This was 1,000 times worse than any hysterical mother. I fought back the tears stinging in my eyes. I sure as hell didn't want to be seen bawling on the morning news. What I wanted to do was tell them all to just go away, but I couldn't trust myself to talk. What a fitting ending to the most horrific night of my life. I looked from reporter to reporter, trying to find any hint that the mob would relent. It was then that I caught sight of Anatoly walking briskly toward the group. When he reached the huddle, he pushed his way past the camera crews to my side, and I felt his protective hand find a resting spot beneath my shoulder blades.
Miss Katz is suffering from a severe sore throat due to the attack, Anatoly reported. She will be able to answer questions after she's had a day or so to rest her voice.
The journalists voiced some protests, but Anatoly maneuvered me through the horde, his hand never leaving my back. I half expected the reporters to block our way, but there was something very authoritative about Anatoly's manner. You kind of got the feeling that no one wanted to mess with him. Outside the hospital, a few cabs were lined up in wait. We sat down in the first one, and Anatoly gave the driver my address.
How do you feel? He asked, addressing me for the first time since our less than hospitable exchange hours earlier.
Like I need to pull the covers over my head and not come out for a week?
Got it. Is there anything you really need to do this week?
The flicker of amusement dulled my depression. I regarded him without making eye contact. I assume the police talked to you?
Of course.
He propped an arm up against the back of the seat.
There was some question of my using excessive force, but it didn't take long for it to become clear that I was just protecting you.
Did they tell you about Susan Lee?
Yes.
They say he killed her. And if you hadn't shown up, he would have killed me, too. Anatoly raised an eyebrow.
I guess I'm not such an asshole after all.
No, you're still an asshole. You're just an asshole with really good timing. Anatoly let out a rich, full laugh. It was contagious. I began giggling along with him despite the pain. It didn't take long before the giggling turned into hysterical laughter. I put one hand on my throat in an attempt to soothe it and the other on my convulsing stomach. Anatoly, who had quieted down, gently pushed a stray curl away from my face, and that was all it took. I was sobbing against his shoulder as he silently held me. My mind drifted back to a few days earlier when I had been comforting Andy in a similar manner, and that just made me cry harder. By the time the cab arrived at my apartment, I had begun to pull myself together.
Are you all right?
He stroked my hair and used a thumb to wipe away a stray tear.
Yeah, I'm okay.
Anatoly looked incredulous. Well, it was a pretty stupid question now, wasn't it? I wiped the remaining tears with the back of my hand and searched my purse for money. Anatoly beat me to the punch and paid the fare. He got out of the cab and waited as I climbed out after him.
I'll walk you up to your door.
Thank you. That would be great. Without speaking, we walked up to the 3rd floor. Anatoly stood at the head of the stairs as I stuck my key in the lock. I paused as I summoned the nerve to ask for yet another favor. I don't suppose you could step in for a minute while I get myself settled? I asked, keeping my eyes glued to the door.
I'd love to.
Don't get the wrong idea, Anatoly.
I wouldn't dream of it. I've learned my lesson about being too presumptuous.
Good. I quickly ushered him in. Mr. Katz came out of the bedroom to cajole some cat food out of me, but after seeing Anatoly, changed his mind and quickly retreated. He doesn't like strangers.
Smart cat.
I was going to make myself a cup of tea. Would you like some? Anatoly waved his hand in refusal. He sat down on the couch and watched from the living room as I put the kettle on.
Did you know him well?
I wouldn't ever have qualified him as a close friend, but I would have felt comfortable vouching for his demure disposition. I guess that means I didn't know him at all, huh?
Not necessarily. Anatoly rubbed his eyes and yawned. The police said he had frontal lobe damage. People with that condition can be very unpredictable. They can come across as relatively stable, well-adjusted individuals, and then something happens and they just snap. The brain's mysterious that way.
I waited for the water to boil before sitting down in a chair opposite him. The police think he's the one who tore up my car.
Really? He scratched the stubble on his chin. I suppose that's possible. What do you think?
Possible. I took a sip of my tea. I toyed with the idea of telling Anatoly my real theories. After all, he seemed to want to listen. Maybe he could help. I looked up at Anatoly and noted that he had eased back farther on the sofa and was resting his eyes. I'm sorry, I said, glancing at my wall clock that read 2 a.m. You must be exhausted. If you want to go home, I totally understand. His lids retracted enough to display the red veins surrounding his pupils.
Do you want me to stay?
I hesitated, unsure of what he was asking.
Don't worry, I realize the mood right now is not one of romance. If I stay, I'll sleep on the couch, but after everything you've gone through tonight, I thought you might not want to be alone.
Melt. Once again, Anatoly had gone through an apparent metamorphosis. That, or I was talking to the only man in the world who was able to balance being an egotistical jerk with being exceptionally insightful and considerate. If you're sure you don't mind. You wouldn't have to stay on the couch. I have an extra bedroom with a fold-out futon. Anatoly nodded. That sounds perfect. I got up to make the bed for him. Maybe I would tell him about all the other stuff tomorrow. Right now, it was time to sleep. Chapter 9. No one can make you doubt yourself more than the people who claim to believe in you most. Sex, drugs, and murder. I woke up at 11, which wasn't nearly late enough considering I hadn't turned the lights off until 4:30 a.m. But Mr. Katz was making the possibility of further sleep an unreachable goal due to his repeated attempts to curl up on my head. I reluctantly rolled out of bed and examined myself in the mirror. The bruises on my neck had come to resemble monstrously large hickeys. Great. Hopefully it would be cold today, because I was definitely wearing a turtleneck. For now, I settled for a terry robe over my cotton PJs. When I got to the kitchen, I found Anatoly in the living room, jamming his feet into his socks and boots. Going somewhere? I didn't realize you were up. Anatoly looked up from his laces. My God, you look like you've been making out with a vampire. Gee, thanks for the compliment, but sorry, vampires are Dina's thing. Anatoly looked confused. Forget it, never mind. Do you want some coffee? I went into the kitchen and pulled out some whole beans from the freezer. I don't have time right now. He threw on his jacket before giving me his full attention. But I'd love to take a rain check. Have an appointment with a potential client? You got it. I poured the beans into the grinder. I guess that means more Java for me. It's nice to know you do drink normal coffee and not just those whipped cream sugar drinks they serve at Starbucks. Say it with me. Caramel, brownie, frappuccino. Not a milkshake, not a whipped cream sugar drink, a caramel brownie frappuccino. Right. I'll call you later, okay? He brushed his lips against my forehead, then started to leave. Anatoly. He stopped. Yeah? Thanks for saving my life. That was really nice of you. He came back and gave me a more heated kiss. Anytime. And he was gone. Mr. Katz walked purposefully across the living room, reclaiming his space now that our guest had left. I realized I had felt so safe with Anatoly there. Maybe Detective Lorenzo had been right. It was a pretty big coincidence that Andy had tried to kill me one day after the whole car thing. Still, it didn't make sense. It was highly possible that Andy had seen me driving around the block looking for parking. He might have been able to recognize my car, but the sequence of events was off. The Acura had been vandalized on Friday night or Saturday morning. I had turned Andy down for a date on Saturday night. Plus, he hadn't really gotten mad at me until he had seen me with Anatoly on Sunday night. So what was the motive for messing up my car? And even if he had read my books, and I had my doubts about that, Andy didn't strike me as anywhere near detail-oriented enough to pull off a copycat crime. Of course, it was true that the crime he would be copying was fictional, and described detail for detail in print. Then there was the glass and the book. I was sure that someone had been in my apartment. More to the point, they wanted me to know they had been here. They had taken great pains to be obvious enough to spook me, but subtle enough to give me nothing of substance to take to the police.
It was genius. Andy wasn't a genius.
I poured the ground beans into the espresso machine. Assuming the stalker wasn't Andy, the person who did these things hadn't done anything violent. Whoever was responsible could just be pulling a head trip. I had no reason to believe otherwise at this point. It was certainly a better possibility than the alternative. By the time I was done with my coffee, 5 reporters had called for quotes. I left my answering machine in charge of fielding questions and went to submerge myself in a hot bath. When I got out of the tub, there were 7 more messages. In addition to calls from reporters, I was also getting calls from every acquaintance that had access to my number. The story about Andy had been on the morning news shows, and apparently the entire world, along with a few alien life forms, had been watching. My mother had seen the report, become hysterical, and called my sister. Then Leah had become hysterical, and they had decided the best way to handle their mutual hysteria was to call me on a 3-way conference call so I could have the pleasure of calming them down simultaneously. Then I got to listen to them berate me for not phoning them immediately. They understood why I might not want to face my friends right now, but they were family. Then Dina called, who was as close to hysterical as Dina got, not to mention pissed. She understood why I might not want to deal with my crazy family right now, but how could I not call her? Then came the call from Marcus, who had not seen the report himself but had heard about it from Donato, and was deeply hurt to have gotten the news third hand. By the time I was done talking to Marianne, I found myself questioning whether surviving the attack was really such a good thing. By 2 o'clock, I decided I needed to get out of the apartment. Unfortunately, that didn't work out so well either, since the first person I bumped into was Alice, who was, of course, hysterical. I retreated back into my home, double-locked the door, an act provoked more from fear of my loved ones than of any stalker, turned the phone's ringer off, and turned the volume on the answering machine to its lowest setting. I located my cat resting by the bay window. "That's what I like about you, Mr. Katz. You know when to shut up." Mr. Katz just continued lounging, thus proving my point. I stood in the middle of my living room and tried to figure out how to get through the day with my sanity intact. I went over to the bookcase and ran my fingers over the novels on the top shelf. My hand stopped on Sex, Drugs, and Murder. I hadn't looked at the book since I had taken it back from the police station, and I hadn't read it since its completion. I felt the raised print on the cover. Mr. Katz jumped off the windowsill. "I'm going to freak myself out now, so do you mind staying here and keeping me company?" He got up and strolled to the bedroom. "Thanks a lot. See if I comfort you if you're ever stalked by a Doberman." I sat down on my love seat and tucked my feet under me. It was time to refresh my memory. By 7 p.m., Mr. Katz had decided to be the supportive roommate after all, and was curled up on my lap. I hadn't moved from my chair except for 2 bathroom breaks and to prepare dinner for my insistent pet. I had fought the temptation to skim the familiar chapters in fear of missing an important detail. There was no longer any doubt in my mind that the break-ins and vandalism I had been subjected to were taken right out of my novel. I had included 2 murders in the book. There was the porn star who was raped and beaten to death with a golf club. And then there was the murder of Kitty, who was killed by 4 strikes of a hatchet, 2 to her back, 1 to the back of her head, and 1 directly over her heart. Had I written that? Was I that sick? Mr. Katz purred and rubbed his head against my stomach. I turned back to the description of Kitty's death. Someone buzzed my apartment. I jumped to my feet, sending Mr. Katz crashing to the floor. "Sorry, sweetie, I'm just a little on edge." "Of course, there's nothing to really worry about. I mean, murderers don't ring buzzers, right?" Mr. Katz just glared at me, no longer in the mood to be comforting. I tried to shake the tension out of my arms before pressing the intercom. "Who's there?"
"Your friends," Dina said. "You know, the ones you don't care enough about to call after life-altering experiences."
I pressed my forehead against the wall and buzzed them in. I had totally forgotten that tonight was movie night. Upon entering, Marianne threw her arms around me, almost knocking me off balance.
"I'm so glad you're okay," she gushed. "All I could think about today was what I would have done if something had happened to you. You're one of my best friends. You're family, Sophie."
"Okay, she's fine, so drop the dramatics."
Dina was studying the pattern on my rug with an intensity that would suggest she hadn't seen it 50 million times before. I went over and gave her a hug as well.
"Don't make me cry, Sophie," she said after giving me a little squeeze. "And don't ever do anything like that again. Got it?"
Okay, I promised to never again put my neck in the hands of a homicidal mental patient.
Dina pulled back and patted my arm.
That's my girl.
I'll go make some popcorn. I took Marianne's coat and hung it on a rack by the door. What are we watching tonight? Marianne pulled a video out of her tote bag.
I got The Object of My Affection with Jennifer Aniston. It's a little old, but it's supposed to be great.
Dina fell onto the love seat.
God help us all.
Be nice. I scanned the synopsis before handing it back. This is perfect. Light, silly, and brainless.
Oh, no, it's not brainless. It's supposed to be really thought-provoking.
Thought-provoking? Are you serious?
Dina snatched the video from Marianne.
Look at the photos on the back. They're wearing pastel, for God's sake.
It's controversial.
How exactly is Jennifer Aniston controversial?
She's in love with a gay man. Homosexuality is controversial.
Oh, really? And where exactly do you live again? Because in the city that I live in, homosexuality is about as controversial as kissing on the first date.
Not everyone lives in San Francisco. Just because this movie didn't meet with resistance here doesn't mean that it didn't raise a few eyebrows in Jackson, Mississippi.
Ooh, it raised eyebrows. And when was that? Like 5 years ago?
Dina clapped a hand over her heart.
Please, is there any explicit gay sex in this?
No, they wouldn't.
She scrutinized the cover for something to confirm her protest. Jennifer in her evening gown and upswept hairdo said it all. Marianne sighed in relief.
Then it's not controversial.
Dina relaxed back into the pillows. I was trying to block them out so I could count the seconds between pops. Nothing's worse than a bag of burnt Orville Redenbachers.
So, speaking of first date kisses and explicit sex, Dina said, how was your date with Anatoly?
Marianne quit pouting and leaned on the counter dividing the kitchen from the living area. I stopped the timer on the microwave. It was pretty fun. I have mixed feelings about how it ended. We got in a little tiff, and then Andy tried to kill me. That sucked. But Anatoly did save my life, so the evening wasn't a total loss.
That's right. They said on the news that he was the one to rescue you.
Dina plucked a piece of lint from her brown lycra top.
Looks like you got yourself a regular knight in shining armor. To be honest, I'm kind of surprised that the two of you didn't end up at his place, considering how hot and heavy you were at the 500 Club.
How did you know we were at the 500 Club?
Jason was there, too. He said he waved at you, but you were a little preoccupied making out with your Russian playmate.
That's the great thing about my coloring. No one can ever tell when I'm blushing. We just kissed.
Yeah, some kiss. Jason said that it looked like the two of you were ready to do it right there on the bar.
Oh, for God's sake, so we made out in a bar. So what? Aren't you the one who was just arguing that nothing short of gay pornography could be qualified as controversial? Don't tell me you're shocked by a little public kissing session.
Shocked? No. Maybe a little titillated.
Dina!
Marianne gasped. I peeked in her direction. Her blush, I could see.
What? Sophie was being fondled by a guy who, by her description, would have turned on Mother Teresa. And you don't want to hear the juicy details?
I was not being fondled. I was being kissed. How is it that Jason seems to show up every time I'm with Anatoly anyway? Is he following me, or...
Oh, shit. Are you okay?
Marianne asked.
Yeah, you look like you swallowed a lemon.
I tried to keep my hand steady as I poured the popcorn into a bowl. Dina, what do you know about Jason?
What do I know about him? Well, I know he's a little odd.
Marianne shook her head.
Understatement.
Dina ignored her.
He's also very sweet and really intelligent. And here's the most important part. He's fucking awesome in the sack. I'm telling you, that vampire can bite me anytime, anywhere.
I spoke up before Marianne could start another battle over morality versus sexual freedom. Listen, Dina, do you remember the stuff I told you about the hang-ups and the broken glass in my kitchen?
Dina was telling me about that. That is so bizarre.
Well, it gets more so. I filled them in on the details of what had happened to my car and the misplaced book. By the time I finished, Dina was on her feet.
Jesus Christ, Sophie, that can't be a coincidence.
I agree, but the police thought I was being paranoid. They think that Andy was the one who messed up my car, and they don't think anyone ever broke into my apartment.
I don't think so.
Dina shook her head with an air of impatience.
Anyone who keeps their novels in alphabetical order by author's last name, and then chronological order by publishing date, isn't going to inadvertently put a book in sideways. And the stuff about the car... Well, that's exactly what happened to Kitty's car. That doesn't sound like the work of some crazed guy with brain damage.
Gosh, you know what this reminds me of? Marianne asked. That poor Tolsky guy who died in the exact same way as the character in his movie? Oh, or that rap singer, J.J. Money, shot in both kneecaps and the head, just like in his single.
Marianne stuffed another handful of popcorn in her mouth, temporarily oblivious to the shock that had blanched both my features and Dina's.
You don't think there's a connection?
This was too out there. What in God's name had I gotten myself into?
Could be, Dina said. Some psycho serial killer who thinks it's funny to murder people in the same way they've described someone else being killed through their works. What did that note say? You reap what you sow?
I stood up and started pacing. But Tolsky lived in L.A. and J.J. Money in New York. The same guy couldn't have killed both of them.
Come on, Sophie, ever hear of air travel?
Dina tapped her 3-inch heel against the floor.
Besides, it's not like they were killed on the same day. There were some 3 months between their deaths.
But Tolsky wasn't murdered, remember? I put my shaking hands in my jean pockets. It was a suicide, and it wasn't like he was shot at close range or jumped out a window. He slit his wrists. How many people kill someone by slitting their wrists? Yesterday I would have said that Tolsky's death had a lot of suspicious overtones, but not now. Now I was unwilling to admit that Tolsky's passing could be the result of anything other than a suicide. Entertaining other possibilities was way too terrifying. Plus, if there were any signs that it had been a murder, the police would have picked up on it and caught his killer by now. It was a high-profile case. Dina scoffed.
You know, for a mystery writer, you certainly are naive about the judicial system. Lots of high-profile cases get fucked up. Whatever happened to Jimmy Hoffa? What about JFK? He was pretty high-profile, don't you think? Do you really believe that he was shot with a magic bullet? I don't think so. Kennedy's killer is out there somewhere right now enjoying a Heineken.
Marianne nearly spilled the bowl of popcorn as she jumped up.
Oh, my God! Are you saying that the same guy who shot JFK broke into Sophie's car?
The room went silent for a moment. Dina dug her nails into her palm, and I studied the hole in my jeans. No, Marianne, I managed to say. I think we can safely rule that possibility out.
Thank goodness for that.
She lowered herself back into her seat and started back into the popcorn. Dina quietly counted to 10. I sat down next to Marianne.
I think what Dina meant is that the police aren't always right. They don't always catch the bad guys. And to that end, I've got to admit she has a point. With two crimes being committed so far apart and over such a long period of time, it's not a stretch to think that the police would have missed the connection. Shit, I had just acknowledged the possibility.
Of course, there might not be a connection, but...
But then again, there might, Dina finished. Sophie, you really need to talk to the police about this.
Are you kidding? Didn't you just hear me tell you that the police think I'm a nutcase? One of them came right out and asked me if I took drugs. And now you want me to go to them and tell them not only that I think someone is stalking me, but that I think my stalker is the criminal mastermind who is responsible for the death of one of Hollywood's most famous producers and everybody's favorite hip-hop artist? They'll have me committed or lock me in rehab, or both if the state feels like funding it.
No. If I'm going to the cops again, I need to have something more concrete than paranoid speculation. I'm going to have to go to them with a suspect.
Okay, so who's your suspect? I know we've ruled Oswald out.
How exactly should I phrase it? I gave Dina a sideways glance. Direct. Dina would expect me to be direct. I hate to say this, Dina, but what about Jason?
She looked like I had just punched her in the stomach. The police are right. You are on drugs. Jason is completely harmless. He couldn't hurt a fucking fly.
Oh, give me a break, Dina, I countered. He's a self-proclaimed vampire.
All right already. I admit it. He's a little different. But it's all a game, Sophie. He knows that. He told you that.
Yeah, he also told me he wanted to be a real vampire. The man is waiting for Dracula to enter him into his coven.
Okay, maybe if J.J. Money had his blood drained out of him, I'd consider the possibility. But that's not what happened, is it? How many vampires use Smith & Wesson's?
But the blood was drained from Tolsky's body, wasn't it? Besides, we just established that Jason is sort of a vampire in training. Maybe he's trying to prove himself worthy of the privilege. Isn't that part of the folklore? Dina hesitated.
I thought that was werewolves.
Werewolves? Nobody wants to be a werewolf.
I don't remember any of this stuff being in that movie with Tom Cruise, Marianne added before taking another handful of popcorn.
No, the recent movies have been taken from modern interpretations of the legend, Dina said. I'm pretty sure the whole proving yourself worthy crap came from the medieval stuff.
I'll get the encyclopedia. I started to go to my office but stopped myself. Oh, this is stupid. Who cares which supernatural creature did what in which book? The point is, your boyfriend is completely insane. You just started dating him, you don't know what he's capable of, and he's from Southern California.
Having the bad taste to wear L.A. gear and inject yourself with silicone doesn't make you more capable of murder than the rest of the population. Besides, Jason doesn't do either of those things. His worst offense is an overly amorous attachment to his cell phone.
You're missing my point, Dina. Tolsky was from Los Angeles, as in Southern California.
So? L.A. County is bigger than most countries. Besides, J.J. Money lived and died in New York City, and Jason didn't live in New York. But I can think of someone who has.
Who? Marianne's voice was muffled by all the popcorn. Dina sat down and rested her elbows on her knees.
Oh, I don't know. Perhaps a cocktail will help jog my memory. Anybody else in the mood for a White Russian?
Oh, no. I put my hand out as if that would somehow block the accusation. It's not Anatoly. He's one of the good guys. He saved my life. He's a perfectly stable, normal, sane guy.
What does he do? Marianne asked.
He's a contractor.
A contractor?
Dina pressed her palms into her forehead.
Sophie, everyone knows contractors are some of the most unethical people on the planet.
Oh, goody. I put my arm around Marianne. It's Morality 101, taught by Dina Lopiano, the woman who sells us edible undies.
Knock it off and just think about it. A contractor might know how to break into this place.
Anyone could break into my place, Dina. My fucking window won't close. The man is not a killer. I would know.
The way you knew about Andy?
That was a little different. I never really knew Andy. My only contact with him was when he was bagging my groceries.
Yeah, Anatoly, on the other hand, is bagging you. And we all know that men never hurt the women they sleep with, right?
I would know if I was dating a murderer.
Do you really think I'm such a poor judge of character that I'd miss something like that? Well, that's obviously what you think of me.
No, I think you're an excellent judge of character. You like to date weirdos and you never fail to find men whose personalities fit the profile.
That's it. I'm out of here. Marianne, are you coming or what?
But we haven't even watched the movie.
Marianne was the only one in the room who remembered there was a movie.
They all live happily ever after. Come on, if you want to ride home, you better get your stuff together.
Marianne gave a little squeak of protest, but tucked the video under her arm anyway. She took my hand firmly in hers.
I think your new boyfriend sounds nice. Not psychotic at all.
Thank you.
Can we go now?
Marianne collected her bag and coat with exaggerated slowness in a deliberate attempt to tick Dina off.
Does he live nearby?
Just 3 blocks away. Dina froze with one arm in her leather jacket.
Sophie, you said Anatoly went to the police station with you when you reported the car break-in. Did he meet you at the apartment?
No, he met me at the car. It was parked in front of his place. I shouldn't have said that. Now I had demonstrated that Anatoly had opportunity.
Jesus, Sophie, I'm serious.
Just keep your boyfriend away from me and I'll be fine.
I guess it's true what they say. Denial ain't just a river in Egypt.
Dina held the door open for Marianne.
Just be sure to lock this after we leave, and keep the phone by your bed. Oh, and if you plan on having Anatoly over, you might want to take a tip from Sharon Stone and keep an ice pick there as well.
I hurled a pillow from the couch at her and it landed quietly against the just-closed door, leaving me with a burning desire to throw something of greater substance. Something breakable would be good. Mr. Katz cowered under the coffee table.
Don't worry, I'll restrain myself. No more throwing.
I gently coaxed the cat out into the open before picking him up and cuddling him in my arms.
It wasn't Anatoly. I would know. I would feel it.
Yes, there were a lot of coincidences, but that's all they were. Lots of people moved to Russian Hill. It was a beautiful place to live. The fact that my car was vandalized while parked in front of his apartment made him even less of a suspect. Why would anyone with half a brain be that obvious? So there were a few chance encounters. Starbucks, the art opening. It was the night of the art opening that I had found the broken glass. Anatoly had arrived at the opening late, later than I had. What the hell did he do with his days anyway? He wasn't really working, and he was so vague about his business. And then there was his friend in L.A. whom he had spoken of, the one who wasn't there anymore. I flashed back to my first encounter with Anatoly. What had he said about the Times article concerning J.J. Money's death? The basic premise is the same, reaping what you sow and all that. It took me a moment to realize that the pain in my chest was at least partially the result of Mr. Katz's claws digging in. I dropped him to the floor and checked the damage to my shirt. Anatoly was innocent. I was sure of it. Dina was just trying to deflect attention away from the wacko she was dating. Mr. Katz purred and nuzzled my feet. Oh, sure, try to sweet-talk me now. Come on, let's get ready for bed. I ushered him into the bedroom, but not before checking the locks and taking the phone with me. Chapter 10. There was a con artist amongst her acquaintances. The challenge was going to be figuring out who that person was. Sex, drugs, and murder. She just wouldn't let up, I said. Marcus massaged a mango-scented creamy substance into my scalp. I mean, she's dating a creature of the night and she accuses the guy I'm dating of being suspicious? Head back. I raised my voice so it could be heard over the stream of water working through my hair. She's never even met Anatoly. I have met Jason, and let me tell you something. Of the two of them, Jason is definitely the more likely suspect. Up. I relocated to a chair in front of a mirror. I look like a drowned rat. Uh-oh. That sounds like an attempted murder charge ready to happen. Not funny. No, what's funny is you and Dina getting all worked up over nothing. Nothing? I whipped around to confront him. My life could be in danger, and you call that nothing? Do you want me to massacre your hair? No. Then you'd best be turning that sassy little head of yours back around and stay still. I pushed my lower lip out, but did as I was told. After all, how would it look if I was murdered with a bad haircut? Honey, I'd die if anything ever happened to my favorite client. He blew me a kiss in the mirror. But could you run the part about the misplaced book equating to a sinister death threat by me again? 'Cause that's where I get lost. It's not just the book, it's the vandalized car, and Andy couldn't have done that, right? The man just tried to kill you. Why would he want to hurt your car? Oh, wait, you were talking about the glass, your cat, I'm sorry, your psycho-killer maniac man knocked over. There was the note, too, I reminded him. Or do you think that Mr. Katz has suddenly become literate? Okay. The note's kinda creepy, but honey, let's be real. 6 months ago, J.J. Money was shot in New York, and I do believe that homeboy they've arrested has been convicted by a jury. Juries have been known to be wrong. Uh-huh. And you never are. Now let's look at Mr. Hollywood. Slit wrists in the bathtub. No sign of struggle, no sign of forced entry, long history of alcoholism and depression, okay? It wasn't suicide, Marcus. Well, the LAPD, those would be the boys in the cute uniforms who are actually trained to solve crimes, they have a different line. I'm your number one fan, Soph, but writing about fictional criminals does not make you an expert on the real thing. What's your point, Marcus? My point is that the real experts have found nothing to connect Tolsky and J.J. Money's deaths, and certainly nothing to connect them to your messed up car. So isn't it possible that you're overreacting just a smidge, sweetie? Not that I blame you. After what happened with Andy, you're entitled to be more paranoid than McCarthy. But you need to be thinking about the possibility that neither of the men that you and Dina are dating is a serial killer. But Marcus, my car was vandalized in the exact same way Kitty's car was vandalized in sex, drugs, and murder. Okay, I know the man had brain damage. But Andy did know how to read, didn't he? It wasn't Andy. Marcus sighed and swiveled the chair to the right. Honey, you've been through hell, but now your little writer's mind has gotten carried away. Even if Andy wasn't responsible for all the weird stuff you've been going through, and I personally think that he was, a prank call, a broken glass, and a vandalized car do not a murder plot make. Particularly if that car was vandalized while parked overnight on the streets of San Francisco by some chick too cheap to pay for a spot in a garage two blocks away. Do I give you shit about your parking tickets?
All the time. But I think you're missing my point.
I chewed on my lip as Marcus continued to snip away. His arguments did have a certain undeniable logic to them. He ran his fingers through my dark brown mop.
Here's the thing. You may have had the opportunity to converse with her latest stud muffin, but Dina's the one who's been doing the pillow talk with him, and she's in a better position to say what he is or is not capable of. On the other hand, Dina's never met your new plaything. All she knows is what you told her, and some of that does make him sound a little sketchy.
He didn't do it, Marcus.
Down, girl, I didn't say he did.
Like Dina, I'm sure you know what your man would or wouldn't do, but what I'm getting at here is that Dina's biggest offense is acting like an overly concerned friend.
So you're saying I may have been a tad hard on her? Gold star.
I guess I should call her?
I guess you should.
I scrunched up my face. I hated admitting I was wrong. I started to bend forward so I could get my cell phone out of my purse, but Marcus pulled me back.
Make amends later. Now we blow dry. If we wait, you'll frizz.
Oh, well, I wouldn't want to frizz. I spent the next 15 minutes getting my head decorated with curlers of various shades and sizes, and the following 40 sweating under the dryer. When I was done, Marcus held up a hand mirror in back of me so I could examine all angles.
Tell me I'm brilliant.
You're brilliant, Marcus. I shook my head from side to side. God, I love it when it moves. It looks beautiful, as it always does after you're through with it. Tomorrow, I would spend 2 hours in front of the mirror in a fruitless effort to recreate the look he had just given me. But for the next 2 hours, I would be gorgeous. Stay with me while I call Dina?
Of course. What kind of friend would I be if I didn't stand by and hold your hand while you grovel?
You're just so sweet. I pulled my phone out and pressed 5 to speed dial the number to Dina's store.
Guilty pleasures, how can we make you smile?
Dina, it's me. I looked up at Marcus, who had become distracted. Donato had just walked in.
Hi, I'm surprised you called.
Yeah, well, I've been thinking about last night. I tried to grab at Marcus's shirt to hold him back, but he smacked my hand away and went to meet Donato. So much for watching me grovel.
I've been thinking about it, too.
Dina hesitated before continuing.
I'm sorry.
You're sorry? I'm the one who was wrong. I totally attacked your boyfriend. I accused him of being a psychopath.
And I accused Anatoly of the same thing, but you had reason to be paranoid and irrational. You're the one that was almost killed. I just got defensive because that's what I do. You know me. I can never just let things slide.
I'm not sure anyone would have let that one slide. I tried to give Marcus a thumbs-up sign, but he was all the way across the room running his hands through Donato's hair. Somehow his interest seemed more than professional.
So we're good?
I relaxed back into the swivel chair. We're good.
Great, because we have some celebrating to do.
What are we celebrating?
You're not being killed, for one.
Oh, yeah, that's a good one. I brushed a stray hair off my jeans. Nothing too wild, though. I've had enough excitement in the last week to hold me over for the rest of the decade. Although, Marcus did just do my hair, so I should probably be seen in public before I destroy it.
How about a little private bitch session in the park followed by dinner out?
You mean...
Yep, bitch's circle. I can be there by 4. I'll bring the wine.
God, we haven't been there in forever. I went over to the coat rack to grab my jacket. Maybe afterward we could get a bite to eat at PJ's oyster bed?
Oysters, Rockefeller for everybody.
So did Marcus do that cool curly style again?
Mm-hmm.
I pressed a curl against my head and watched it spring back to life.
I think if I ever grow my hair out, I'm going to get a perm. Jason's standing next to me and he's nodding his head in agreement.
Oh, right, like she was going to keep Jason around long enough for him to see her hair grow out.
You have time to decide.
Since you have company, I won't keep you. I'll see you at 4.
On the dot.
I hung up and interrupted the little moment that Donato and Marcus seemed to be sharing. Hey, Donato, good to see you.
And you. I heard about your ordeal. I'm so glad to see you are safe.
Marcus took a reluctant step back from Donato to include me.
You're smiling, so I assume that means you and Dina made nice.
We're meeting at the bitch's circle at 4. She's bringing the drinks.
If you're going out afterward, you should change. That shirt has a coffee stain on it. And don't let her out-sexy you. You're the diva.
Marcus got a mischievous glint in his eye and reached out to play with Donato's hair again.
Speaking of sexy, the salon's owner is on vacation, which means that her upstairs office is all empty right now, and she does have the comfiest couch.
Okay, well, I'd love to stay and chat, but you two are completely not listening to me.
Huh?
Bye, Marcus. Bye, Donato. Have fun defacing the boss's office. It was a good thing Marcus couldn't procreate. The world would have a population crisis of apocalyptic proportions. I spent the rest of the day doing mundane things like grocery shopping and renting a car. My insurance had agreed to spring for a medium-sized rental while they assessed the damage, but I decided to upgrade to a large cherry-red Mustang convertible. The mental image I had of myself cruising down the streets in some hot little outfit with the wind whipping through my now split-end free hair was just too tantalizing to resist. Of course, this was San Francisco, so I'd have to throw a parka over the hot little outfit, and for the first day I'd have to wear a scarf on my head because no way in hell was I going to put my new hairstyle in jeopardy. But other than that, the image would be complete. I was driving along the harbor in the Marina District, feeling happy, glamorous, and cold when my cell phone started playing Frère Jacques. I fumbled around in my purse for it before pressing it to my ear.
Bonjour, c'est Sophie.
English is still the official national language, right? Anatoly asked. What? You're the only one who can be bilingual? I may not have lived in 3 different countries, but I'm not completely unworldly.
Right. When you answer the phone in French, you're supposed to say, allô, not bonjour.
Did you call for a reason? His laughter was cut up by the static on the line. As a matter of fact, I called for 2 reasons. One was to find out how you're doing. Well, let's see. Thanks to Marcus, my usual frizz has been replaced by some lovely curls. I rented a pretty new car, and at the present moment no one is trying to kill me, so I guess I'm just ducky.
Your throat feels better?
I was just getting ready to belt out the score from Les Mis.
Not that I don't want to hear what I'm sure will be a very original rendition of the musical, but for the sake of expediency, let's cut to my second question. What are you doing tonight?
What did I want to do tonight? Let's see, I could strip him down, throw him on my bed, or vice versa. Shit, what was I thinking? I'm meeting my friend Dina at the park.
I'm sorry, Sophie, but I can barely hear you.
I pulled back the phone and looked at the screen. It had been days since I had recharged the thing, and I probably had all of 3 minutes before it died on me. I said I'm going to meet my friend in the botanical gardens. We're going to make like Snow White and feed the squirrels among the redwoods. We're very earthy that way.
Ah, I can hear you a little better. So what's the game plan when you're done with the tree-hugging stuff? You can't stay in the park all night.
We're going out to dinner afterward.
You're not putting me off, are you?
No, I'm trying to get it on.
Anatoly, I would really like to see you tomorrow. I just can't do it tonight.
I could make out some grumbling on the other end of the line, and it took him a good 30 seconds to come back with an intelligible response.
Does 7 o'clock dinner tomorrow work for you?
7 o'clock is beautiful.
Great, I'll meet you at your place. And Sophie? Don't overdo the Snow White stuff. I see you more in the role of Catwoman.
You mean like from Batman?
That's the one.
Huh. Catwoman was sexy.
Yes, she was.
Right. Well, just keep in mind that I do have to be much further into a relationship before I'll put on a leather catsuit for a guy.
I'm very disappointed, to say the least. I'll see you tomorrow.
Ciao. I hung up the phone and threw it on the adjacent passenger seat. 2 seconds later, it rang again. I giggled to myself. The man wanted me bad. I picked up the phone without checking the caller ID.
Allô, c'est Sophie.
Sophie, is that you? What's with the French already? Shit.
Hi, Mama.
So it is you. It's been so long since you called that I've forgotten what you sound like. You called yesterday, Mama, and I called you just a week before that. We live right here in the same city, and you have to wait 7 days to call me? And how long has it been since I've seen you already? 2 months? 3?
3 weeks, Mama.
3 weeks?
Wars have been fought and won in 3 weeks. I could feel another headache coming on.
Mama, I'm driving, and it's not safe to talk and drive, so if you don't mind getting to the point,
you can't pull over for half a minute to talk to your mother who you haven't seen in almost a month?
Too bad I had a headache. Otherwise, I could give in to the temptation and bang my head into the steering wheel. What can I do for you, Mama?
I have a bladder infection.
Oh, I'm sorry. You know, you should get some rest. Why don't you hang up the phone, get in bed, and take care of yourself?
Don't be ridiculous. I don't need sleep, I need medicine. The Shul's ladies' senior group is coming over to eat and kibitz, and I won't have time to pick up the prescription, so I need you to. Dr. Silverman already called it in. You know the pharmacy I go to.
Mama, I can't. I'm supposed to meet Dina in 45 minutes, and if I go to the pharmacy, I'll be more than half an hour late. Can't Leah do it?
I should ask her to leave Bob and little Jack when they're both sick with the flu.
The flu. I had to hand it to Leah. That was quick thinking.
Mama, I just can't.
I understand, dearie.
You go have fun with your friends.
So I go another day without my medication.
God willing, the infection won't get worse. One more day won't kill me. I hope.
Your bladder infection is not fatal, Mama.
So you're a doctor now? My doctor, the one with the medical degree, he says it can be fatal.
Dr. Silverman diagnosed you and then told you you might die?
He didn't say so exactly, but I know how to read between the lines. I can sense these things.
Mama, I want to help. I really do, but...
Good. Use the key because I won't be able to hear you over the vacuum and pick up some antacids while you're at it. Ethel is always bringing a new spicy recipe for everyone to taste.
Wait, that's not what I... Mama? Mama, are you there?
I stared at the now completely battery-dead phone before throwing it down. Damn it all to hell.
There was no way I was going to be able to meet Dina anywhere near on time, and now I couldn't even call her to tell her. I wasn't too far from her shop. Maybe I could catch her before she left. I turned down Chestnut Street. Guilty Pleasures was just coming into view when it happened. An SUV pulled out of a spot directly in front of the store, leaving it vacant. I struggled to hold back the tears of joy. Getting the antibiotic to cure my mother's bladder infection was truly the right thing to do, and this was the Lord's way of telling me so. I slid the Mustang into the holy space. A little cry of joy escaped my lips when I saw that there was still 20 minutes left on the meter. This is what it meant to be truly blessed. Barbie was putting together a display of exotic oils. Today, she actually looked like a Puerto Rican Barbie doll. She had styled her hair into a halo of neat, thick curls that brushed the shoulders of a cotton candy pink top that matched her lipstick. Her bottom half was adorned in a black leather micro mini and thigh-high boots. Okay, her ensemble still had a few dominatrix accents, but I was pretty sure the pink canceled them out. She looked up from her project.
I remember you, you're Dina's friend,
Sophie, right. Is Dina still here?
You just missed her.
Missed her? But I was blessed.
All right, the Lord works in mysterious ways. I just had to figure out how he wanted me to work this.
Any chance I could use your phone to try and call her?
Go for it.
I walked around the counter and dialed Dina's number. As soon as I did, I heard Nokia's version of the Mexican hat dance coming from a drawer underneath the register. I pulled it open and glared at Dina's cell.
Barbie smiled. She always forgets it there.
If this was God's idea of a joke, it wasn't funny. I slammed the drawer shut and rapidly tapped my fingernails on the counter. So what was Plan B?
Really needed her, huh?
I was supposed to meet her at Golden Gate Park at 4, and I'm going to be a half hour late.
Where in the park?
The Botanical Gardens.
I could call my mother and tell her I just couldn't do it. That would go over well.
On the flip side, I couldn't just stand Dina up.
I can meet her there.
Sorry? I refocused on Barbie.
I could meet her and tell her you're running late. The next salesperson should be here within the next few minutes to relieve me.
And I was heading over to that part of town anyway. I'm having dinner with my parents in the Inner Sunset. That's why I'm dressed so conservatively. I eyed the boots and the mini.
Oh, that's asking a lot.
I don't mind. It really is on my way. Besides, I was planning on asking Dina for a small raise soon, so any little thing I can do to make myself look good helps.
You really don't mind?
Tell me your exact meeting place, and I'll be there.
I felt a little weird about using one of Dina's salespeople as my personal messenger service, but it did seem like the only solution. She was certainly willing enough.
I described the location of the bitch's circle to Barbie. By the time I wrapped up my directions, the next salesperson had come in, and I left to save my mother from the lethal bladder infection. Traffic was unusually light, so the drive across town took about half the time I had planned for. I picked up the meds and dropped them off with my mother. She was so busy making the house beautiful and completely dust-free that I was able to get in and out without being dragged into a lengthy discussion about my marital status. By 4:15, I was standing at the entrance of the Botanical Gardens. I felt a little guilty about only being 15 minutes late. I could have saved Barbie a trip. Walking over dirt paths couldn't have been easy in those boots of hers. I stepped to the side as a hurried tourist brushed past me. You could always identify the tourists by their insistence on wearing short-sleeved shirts while the rest of us dressed for rain and heavy mists. I turned to watch the man make his speedy retreat. There was something vaguely familiar about him. I shrugged and continued down the path at a leisurely pace. Maybe I had seen him at Walgreens or the like. I should probably be in a rush, too, but it was way too pretty a place not to take a moment to stop and smell the flowers. And, assuming Barbie did her thing, Dina wouldn't be expecting me for a while. I zipped up my jacket. The cold weather would mean fewer people around to bug us. This was absolutely my favorite location in the world. It was like a little piece of the country right here in the city. I had been to Central Park before. It didn't even compare. Sure, it was beautiful during the change of seasons, but like everywhere else in New York, it still had a very urban feel to it. That's why I loved San Francisco so much. It was the perfect balance between urban and suburban. There was no other city in the world that I would rather live in. A squirrel scampered down a redwood and paused in the path in front of me. I shook my head in apology. I usually brought peanuts with me, but today I had spent my spare change on my mom's Alka-Seltzer. As I approached the bitch's circle, I could see enough through the brush to note that someone had fallen asleep on one of the benches. Understandable, considering the tranquility of the place. Still, I couldn't help but be a little irked. Yes, it was a public park, but that was my spot. Well, it really didn't matter. After a few swigs of wine, Dina and I would get loud enough to frighten the weary traveler away. It was then that I noticed the person was wearing a pink top. At least it would have been pink if it hadn't been so badly stained with blood. I stood motionless as the sensation of numb horror rolled through my body. Without really willing myself to do so, I approached the woman. Barbie wasn't breathing. She was barely recognizable. Little insects had already started to crawl into the large gouges made in her face, chest, and stomach. I felt the bile burn my throat and I started backing up. I carelessly tripped on a root sticking out of the ground. The fall jarred me out of my shock-induced daze and suddenly I was running. I was pushing past the bushes and crushing small shrubs as I stumbled over them. There was a botanical nursery no more than 50 feet away. I could get help. They would call the police for me. When I reached it, I literally threw myself against the chain-link fence. "Open up! Please! I need help!" But the facility was closed for the day. Everyone had left. I heard some rustling in the foliage behind me. A bird? No, it sounded too big for that. A raccoon? Don't panic. Don't panic. Just breathe and think. No one would be stupid enough to hang around the scene of their own crime. The noise had to have been made by an animal. Or maybe a tourist who decided to go off the path. It wasn't the killer. If it was a tourist, maybe he or she could help me. All I needed to do was call out. I heard the noise again and quickly changed my mind. I ran toward the main entrances. They would be closed up in a matter of minutes, and after that the only available exits would be in places much less conspicuous. Less conspicuous was not good. I got to more open space. Now there were a few people around. A pasty-skinned man with red dreadlocks was lounging under a tree. A Samoan woman was chatting on a payphone. A group of teens all wearing heavy jackets and baggy jeans was huddled around the fountain. How would someone look after brutally murdering a young woman? Would they look scared? Crazed? Or would they have the presence of mind to just blend in? I looked over my shoulder just in time to see a man locking up the gates behind me. I ran to his side and grabbed his sleeve through the bars. "Please help me! She's dead! Oh my God! Oh my God! He killed her! She's dead!" The man narrowed his eyes. "You know, it's a felony to drop acid in a public park."
"What?"
No, listen to me. There is a woman on one of your park benches that has been hacked up with an axe or something.
Okay, now, why don't you just calm down?
You fucking calm down! Oh, shit. This isn't happening. I'm the one who sent her here, and now she's dead. Barbie's dead.
Oh, no. Whatever will happen to poor Ken?
Without even thinking about it, I moved my hand from the sleeve to the collar of the city worker's shirt and yanked him against the gate.
Listen, asshole. A woman has just been killed and is lying on a park bench some 60 yards away. Either you call the police now or I will hurt you. Got it?
I'll call the cops.
Good idea.
I released him and watched as he retreated into a trailer that I assumed was used as an office. I slid down to the ground and pulled my knees up to my chest. This couldn't be happening. Andy had been arrested. I had just come to accept that the majority of my fears had been based on nothing but an overactive imagination. And now Barbie was dead. She had styled her shoulder-length dark hair in a manner similar to the style Marcus had given me just hours ago, gone to my hangout spot, and been murdered. She wasn't supposed to have been there. I was. Dina and I. Where was Dina?
Chapter 11. Alicia understood how a person could be driven to the act of murder. What she never could grasp was why anyone would want to inflict pain. Sex, drugs, and murder. I slowly turned my wrist so I could see the numbers on my watch. 4:38. I used the iron bar to pull myself up and crossed over to the now abandoned payphone.
Hey, where are you going? The police will be here any second.
I ignored the park worker, who had apparently fulfilled his promise, and put 2 quarters into the slot. It took 3 attempts to dial because my fingers kept slipping. Finally, ringing.
I can't get to the phone right now. If you're feeling friendly, leave a message.
Dina? Dina, it's me. Pick up. You're there, right? Please pick up. Silence. I put the receiver back in its cradle. A police car pulled up and 2 officers went over to talk to the park worker, who subsequently pointed in my direction. I stayed rooted by the phone. Where was Dina? The cops crossed over to me. The shorter one folded his arms across his chest and smiled.
So, you're the one who found the body?
I couldn't find my voice, so I just nodded.
Well, I'm Officer Campbell, and this is Officer McLean.
Sophie Katz.
All right, Miss Katz. Care to show us where you found this guy?
Girl. Found this girl. The last thing in the world that I wanted to do was go anywhere near that area again. But clearly drawing them a map and hoping that they found her in a timely manner wasn't an option. I'll show you. The policeman followed at a close distance.
Sorry you had to see this, Officer McLean said. It's never pleasant. Usually we find homeless people in other areas of the park. They rarely come into this part.
Homeless people?
Usually the cause of death is overdose. Occasionally it's natural causes, but we gotta take a quick look to make sure there's nothing suspicious before we turn it over to the...
You don't understand. I stopped and turned around. This isn't a homeless person. I knew this woman. And she didn't overdose. Somebody killed her. They killed her, and now my other friend is missing and I can't find her. I can't find her anywhere. The expression on the officers' faces had changed. Campbell's hand was now resting on his gun.
Why the hell weren't we told this when we were called?
Don't look at me. I practically had to physically threaten that guy to get him to call you at all. McLean took a few steps away and started talking into his radio. Campbell scanned the area.
Okay, let's take this from the top. You lead us to the body and tell us exactly what happened, all right?
McLean joined us again.
Backup's coming, let's go.
I led the way to the bitch's circle and told them the events of the last hour. I took some comfort in the fact that someone was finally taking me seriously, but the main thoughts running through my mind were of Dina. When we finally reached the circle, I hung back and studied the bark of a large redwood. I heard McLean take a sharp breath in.
Holy shit.
My eyes traveled from the bark to the wood